Hello, people of the asylum. I want you to have the kind of wonderful things I've had, the wonderful opportunities I've had. They really haven't come from institutions. They've come from my own personal explorations and personal life. Hi, my name is Jane Emerald, and this is Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. Oh, I just had finished up talking about me proposing to my wife. Well, 2 weeks later, after she visited all the other guys, before I talk about being on pins and needles, she said yes, that she would love to marry me. And we got married, not shortly thereafter. She actually moved to town and lived with a friend of my mom, and we ultimately house sat for that lady. She went on her mission. She was older. Older couples and older ladies, actually, guys, older men too, usually older ladies, they go on missions too. And we got married, and we lived in that little house, and we start our lives together. Now, this sounds bad, but I don't want you to get the wrong idea. And I guess this kind of shapes how I think about things, honestly. When I married my wife, we didn't know each other very well. I was really, to be honest, I was really nervous around her. Because I had never expected to get married. I'm a different enough person. I never thought I'd find somebody who would love me, who would want to be in my life. And at first we were just friends. We just happened to be married. And I was just doing what God had told me to do. God had told me to marry her, so I married her. And I think anybody would see that would spell disaster quickly in a marriage, to not have love, because that's usually what starts out these things. And I must say that you have to be careful about love, because love is often confused. You know, there's infatuation, there's lust. All these things are, I think, really good things, as long as you keep them in perspective. If you're infatuated by somebody, you have to know that at some point that infatuation will end. The day-to-day living with somebody else, seeing them when they're not made up and gorgeous, smelling their morning breath when they're not ready for the day, you might see them when they're not, you know, you might see aspects of them that under starry-eyed conditions that you don't notice, or there might be personality clashes. These things are all part of infatuation, and when infatuation finally gives way to something else, that often spells the end of a marriage, because marriages sometimes are snap decisions on the spur of the moment. Mine certainly looks that way, doesn't it? From my first date until we were engaged was, what, 2-3 days? No, a couple of weeks. And then from engagement to marriage was just a couple of months. And it was just barely when I got off my mission. I didn't have time. I didn't know what it was to be a single person after my mission, because I wasn't. I was immediately engaged and then married. And the question I would come up is, well, did you love your wife? You hardly knew her, and you go, yeah, I did. I hardly knew her. And it's a difficult question to answer whether I loved her then. I think as far as I had the capability of loving someone, I did. So I guess the answer would be yes. But I love her a whole lot more now than I did then. It's now grown into a fact that we depend upon each other. We lean on each other. We take care of each other. And that's the big secret, I think, number one, you have to find somebody like that. And, you know, I've heard so many times where people thought they had found somebody like that, and they hadn't. And the honeymoon period, the courtship and honeymoon period are fantastic. The guys are wonderful. The girls are wonderful. And then all of a sudden, once marriage happens, it's almost like that time is over and it's time to settle down to being ourselves. And if we're slugs, well, we settle down to being slugs. Lisa's sisters have stories to tell of such things. You know, marriages that fell apart, that looked fantastic at the face, that looked good, and then all of a sudden just kind of soured and went away. And so I really can't give any particular advice. You know, I'm only 38 years old. I'm probably not a person to be taking advice from great experience. But from what I've seen, there's no way to tell. People can keep up a facade for quite a while. Not just through courtship and up until the wedding, but for some time after that. And then all of a sudden, it gets harder and harder to keep it up 24 hours a day, and you start getting cracks, starts going through. I think everybody tries to put a good face on it, and that's not a bad thing. Unfortunately, it means that the person you're actually going to be married to 5 years after the fact is probably not going to be the person that you courted and married. Unless they're really very, very honest. Which is a good thing. Boy, you want to go for somebody who's honest, but, you know, we always try to put be on our best behavior. Especially when we're dating or when we're courting or whatever. And it's only after that, when we're living cheek by jowl, you know, when we have to see their underwear, when we have to deal with them without makeup on, you know, when you go out dating, you look your best. After you're married, and after, you know, you don't go to bed made up. Some people do, but not very many. Girls don't go that way made up, you know. And guys, they fart, they smell bad. They've got their trouble too. And it's what you do with that after the beautiful, wonderful times. Not have it passed, but after the time when you're starting to face the reality of living with another person. And I mean living with them. And knowing that some things really irk the heck out of them. There's going to be some things that you do that really upset them. And you're going to have to make that decision of whether you're going to say, hey, this is the way I am. This is who you married. Get used to it. Or if you go, I'm going to try my best to make myself so that you can like me. It becomes this huge compromise, and that's I think what makes these things work. Honestly, I have a great advantage over everybody else. I know God wanted me to be with my wife. I know that she's the person God wanted me to marry. So I've got an advantage over nearly everybody. I don't have questions of whether I married the right person. I know I did, because God told me to marry him. I'm trusting God on this one. It's called faith. And we just hang together. It's been wonderful. It's been fantastic. You know, is there tough times sometimes? Sure. But they become less and less. We constantly work to try to help each other be happy, to feel fulfilled, to take care of each other. My advice when you're looking for somebody to marry, and this is something that I hope my kids hear when they're in that position, when they're thinking, gee, should I marry this person? This is all I can say. Ask God. Ask God. Pray and ask God. And then listen and see what God says. I know that sounds kind of funny to people who have never been brought up in a tradition where God talks back. In my tradition, that he does. You know? I said half of being able to get answers from God is everyone believing God will answer you. So many people are trained in institutions, or their religion teaches them that that you can ask things of God, you can plead for things, you can ask for His grace, but you don't actually ask questions for which He would need to respond. You don't do that. It's almost blasphemous to some people, I guess. But in my religion, no, absolutely not. You ask God questions. You're supposed to. If you're not doing it, you're not getting what you should be getting from God. God has a lot of things to help us know, a lot of things He wants to help us with. The most important decision you'll ever make in your life is the person who you marry. Especially in my religion, because when we get married, when I got married, I went to the temple. One of them's in Denver. I went to the one in Denver. And my wife and I got married. We were sealed together. That's the term for it, sealed. We're sealed for time and all eternity. That means we're going to be married forever. If we remain worthy, and if we live worthy of such a thing, we can be married forever. And that's what we push for. You know, I guess that's a commitment, isn't it? I'm not just saying, oh, until death do us part. That's a pretty long time for most people. No, I'm in this for the really long haul. I'm going to be married to Lisa Nemro, Lisa Tomplay Nemro, my wife, not just until we're old and gray and we finally die. I'm going to be married to her forever. So, you know what? I'm worried about making sure that both of us are happy, not just in this life, but in preparation for a further life to come together. I don't know if that changes perspective. I think it should. But, you know, it just depends. A lot of people can't conceive of that because it's really not a part of their thought process. That's the most important decision you can ever make. It's going to affect the rest of your existence. And God saw us that we go on forever. So, you know what? This is a forever decision. I mean, I'm going to have my kids, but they're going to go off and they're going to get married, and that's going to be the most important relationship in their life. My most important relationship is not with my children. And that's kind of a funny thing, because in our culture, that is. Because marriage is so fleeting. Because relationships we have with other adults are mostly based on sex, and mostly are transitory, or they're becoming more so, you can see in our culture the whole point that that the relationship between a husband and a wife is the most important is gone. That's not true. Everybody says the most important relationship is between you and your children. Ask any single mom what her most important relationship is, and she'll say to that kid. Of course, that brings in all kinds of weird, twisted stuff where mom can't let her kids go, especially if they're sons. Her sons end up kind of taking the place of a husband for her. Hopefully not in a sexual sense, yeesh. But in companionship for their mothers. And it's hard for those mothers to give up. I see it kind of sometimes in my relationship with my mother. My mother is very invested in my life. And it's difficult for her. She knows that my primary relationship is with my wife. It's not with her. You know. And I think that's something as a culture we've lost. And I think that's a bad thing. That's the first and most important thing. Number one, ask God about the person that you're going to marry. And make sure that God says, yes, that's the person you should be marrying. And don't leave it out there floating in the wind. Because do you want to marry the wrong person? No. Especially for a Mormon guy who's marrying forever. This isn't just like, well, we'll try it out. We'll do it for 5 years. If it doesn't work, we'll get a divorce. You know, Mormons do get divorced. It's not unheard of. Unfortunately, it's becoming more prevalent because Mormons are not living their religion very well. You know, you talk to a Mormon, goes, "Oh yeah, I smoke and drink and I carouse around," and people get a bad idea about Mormons. they're not really living their religion. They're not really living what the prophet tells them to do, what the scriptures have told them to do, what Christ wants them to do. They're doing something else. If you're really living your religion, it's a forever thing. So it's a big decision. Now, once you make that decision, what? You fully invest yourself in it. Fully. There is no, let's look at things in 5 years and see how things are going. Let's try that. There's no living together. Because that's, God doesn't want that. When you give yourself to a person, you give everything to it. And both sides are supposed to do that. And that's one of the most important criteria, is can both sides do that? They don't sit there and they don't ponder, how would my life be different if I wasn't married to this person? You don't spend any time pondering that particularly. Because that's not what you should be thinking about. That's the person you spend the rest of your life with. You need to find happiness and joy and peace in that relationship. Because that's the main relationship. That's what it is. In the Mormon sense of looking at things, that's, you won't be saved. You won't be able to be like God without your spouse. That's all there is to it. And that's how it works. For people say, well, where's God's spouse? What's all that? Is God married? Oh, the answer is yes. God's married. Who's God married to? I don't know. He doesn't say. If you were God, and if people were saying nasty things about you like so many people do, swearing on your name, saying the nastiest, dirtiest things about God, spitting on you, and basically not doing anything you say, do you want to reveal to them information about your wife, your spouse, the person that you're attached to, the one you love the most? No. Your job is to protect them from those kind of people. And that's exactly what they do. It doesn't matter that they're his children. He knows the way his children are going to behave on earth. A lot of his children are going to behave. And they're going to do things that are just simply disgusting. And simply horrible. And totally ignore the fact that they have a Father in heaven that wants something better for them. And there's going to be a lot of people that do that. And so he doesn't talk about his wife up there. Anyway. So let's get off that, because that's one of the things that really shakes up people. The Mormon Church can't possibly be true. And you go, well, how could God possibly have kids without a wife? And you go, well, he has his ways. And you go, well, that's not even natural. What does he do? Spawn? What does he do? Spores? Yuck. What? If we're creating God's image, and everything we do here on earth is to prepare us for the future of our lives after this life, then what's the point of getting married and having children if it's not to prepare us for doing the same thing up there, for having spirit children, becoming a God like Heavenly Father is, and of having a world, or many worlds actually, where we send our children so they can gain experience, so they can grow up to be like God, like us, who will hopefully be gods. It's all this huge cycle. Of course, people say, how are we going to have space for all that? The universe is only so big. And you go, I don't know. God takes care of that. I trust God that that's going to work out. Sounds like a Protestant answer, doesn't it? I apologize. But that's all I have to offer at this point. All right. So that's my first advice. Be sure you're marrying the right person. You do that by asking God. God knows. Nobody else does. Even that other person won't know if they're the right person or not. So you can't ask them. It doesn't hurt to get lots of advice from your parents. Honestly, I didn't get a lot of advice from my parents. I had already proposed to Lisa, and then I broke the news to my parents that I just proposed to her. My wife, my mother, was happy. She had spent 3 or 4 days with Lisa and liked her. My grandmother, my mother's mother, who lived there with my mom, she thought I was way too young. I was 21. She got married at the ripe old age of 14. Like, you know, she could only give me advice based on her bad experience. She'd also been married 3 times. Her third marriage had finally lasted 20 years. I've almost passed up my grandmother's longevity in marriage. Anyway, so that's what. The first thing is, you know, the person you should trust most to know this thing is God, because God knows that person better than anybody else, including themselves, know them. Know them better than you ever will. And if He thinks it's a good idea, you should do it. Now you have to understand, it's the most important decision you can make. It's the most important relationship you'll ever have. And it is intended to last forever. Now if you choose not to have it last forever, well, you're going against God's plan. Because God's plan is that people get married and they're married for eternity. Forever. So, you know, if you choose not to do that, you have to know that you're sinning and God's eye. And you have to understand, that's one of the reasons why God doesn't share a lot of intimate details about Himself with you. Because, you know, even the few things you know about God, you don't believe it, or you don't really do any of it. He says, you know, here's my commandment. I tell you this because it'll make you happy. What's the first thing you do? You piss them all off. You say, I don't have to believe in any of this. God's not here. He's not going to slap me upside the head. He's not even here. I don't even have to believe in Him. I don't see Him. He's not here. So, you know, why would God share intimate details about His life, about His reality, with somebody who's already proven time and time again that they're going to blow the whole thing off, and it's not really important, that it's only going to be a matter of trivia for you, that you have no intention of being like God, so He's not going to tell you much about what God's life is like. He's told, I know a little bit more about than probably most people do, but that's not because I'm particularly special. I'm trying to do what He wants me to do, and I get impressions about how things go up there. Am I going to tell you about it? No. Why? Well, because why? It's like casting pearls before swine. That's actually a Bible scripture. Don't cast your pearls before swine. These are my pearls, and I ain't cast them in front of you. And if you're offended by me calling you a swine, well, tough. Who was Christ talking about when He said, don't cast your pearls before swine? Was He talking about pigs? I don't think so. Nobody thinks that. They think it was people. They hate to think that it's themselves. Oh, no, it can't possibly be me. But you know what? If you're not doing what God wants you to do, if you're not living the kind of life God wants you to live, what are you? You're a swine. And you don't get the good stuff. He doesn't offer the good stuff to everybody. He offers you the basics. And if you can't even do the basics, why on earth should you expect anything more? Anyways, oh man, so I'm just being schwack-worthy. Okay. Check in with God to see if you've got the right person. Number two, be absolutely, totally committed to that person. Trying to make them happy. I mean, don't be stupid and foolish about it. If they're going to take advantage of you and destroy you, don't do that. I mean, God doesn't expect you to live in misery and angst and horror. He's not going to tell you to marry somebody like that, I don't think. Maybe He will, I don't know. But I think he would do that only knowing that in deep inside this person's going to straighten out and do better. You just need to have trust in God that it's going to work out. Lisa and I are very different people. You've probably noticed that from just a few things I've talked about. Sometimes it can get a little frustrating because you wish you had somebody with which, you know, you wish you had somebody whose great love in life is exactly the same thing as your great love in life, and you'll just kind of pursue your great loves together. But that isn't the way it often works. I don't know if God necessarily does pairings like that. He didn't do it in that case with me. I'm married to somebody who's very different, but we love each other. We've learned to appreciate each other's strengths. We've learned to depend on them. And together we're much better than I think we would, either one of us would be apart. I take care of Lisa, she takes care of me. And it's wonderful. And that's really what you have to do. Your primary focus has to be on the other person's happiness. It has to be on both sides. it's hard for that to be lopsided. I find it very gratifying that as I have sacrificed for my wife's happiness, number one, she appreciates it, and I like that. And number two, she's reciprocal. She does the same for me. And that's what builds the kind of enduring love that we have, that we just love each other, because we're two people that are intertwined, and wherever somebody has a weakness, we make up for it. I know a lot of my wife's weaknesses. I know her fears. I know things like that. And I try to protect her. I try to make it so that she doesn't have to be afraid. You know, and she does equal things for me. She takes care of me in different ways. I don't have the fears that my wife does. I don't have the concerns I don't know if insecurities is the right word. I don't have the same troubles as my wife does. She tries to help me with my troubles, and I try to help her with hers. And what's not to love a person who's invested in doing that for you? Isn't that what your best friend does? Is that what you hope somebody who is your best friend would do? Lisa and I are best friends. We love each other. We take care of each other. This isn't going to fit on a floppy. Darn shame. I think this is good stuff. That's really the only advice I have to give. It's very simple. There's only a few things to it. Ask God if you're marrying the right person. If God says you're marrying the right person, you can't fail. Well, no, you can fail, but it's not going to be because it couldn't have been a perfect match or a good match. And then you invest yourself fully in it. Your marriage becomes your most important thing. Your marriage to that person becomes the most important thing. That other person becomes the most important thing in your life. Your kids don't you don't start ignoring your spouse because of your children. You don't do that. Your spouse comes first, children come later. Now, it's tough for people who have kids with disabilities. We should know we have one. It's hard not to feel like you need to invest more time in that child so they can have the things that they need. We're very fortunate, I think, with Matt, because his disability isn't so taxing. You know, he's able to physically take care of himself. He's reasonably able to handle most situations that come his way. He's never going to be able to be independent. That's true. But there's every chance that he's going to be able to grow up and at least have a decently good life. And so I don't worry much about that. My primary concern is with my wife, Lisa. Making sure that she's happy, making sure she has what she needs, making sure she's not overworked. It's very easy with six kids for a stay-at-home mom to feel overwhelmed by just stuff. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of egging to get the kids to do a good share of the work so that she's not burdened by it. Anyway. Now we've gone way over long. I'm going to let this go. This is Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. I'm Jay Nemro. I hope this has been useful to you. You know, some people might say that I'm being Pollyannish about it. But let me tell you, I'm living it. I'm living proof that what I think works, works. I won't say that I came into it with this kind of a plan. I learned as I went along. And, hey, it's worked wonderfully. I am so happy with my life. Not because I'm rich and wealthy, not because I'm not. Not because of the house I live in, because frankly I just assume get rid of it and get something that I like better. Then after the possessions I have, frankly, I could do without them and probably be happier. It has much more to do with my relationship with my wife and how wonderful it is and how worthwhile it is and how much gratification I get out of putting everything into making my wife happy. So I hope you can do the same. And so it's time to sign out. Have a great day. Bye.